Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
It is indeed The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. You can visit Ad Age online at adage.com. How convenient. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production here on the SSI Radio Network with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, and a very special guest today, Jerry Della Famina out of New York. Jerry Della Famina is chairman of Della Famina, Rothschild, Jerry, and Partners. And we'll have Jerry on in just a few minutes here with Ray Schillens, Brad Forsythe, and who else do we have coming up this hour?
Well,
we have Andy Borowitz.
Sure we do.
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
And we also have The Wacky World of Marketing with Bruce Abbott, our executive producer. That'll be toward the bottom of the hour, too. So it's back at the weekend here, and it's fun to be talking about advertising and marketing. It ought to be a great conversation, too, with Jerry.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this all week. Jerry, of course, for our younger listeners, we'll have to explain who Jerry is.
Okay.
Anybody under, what, 25, 30?
There you go.
Yeah.
So, what's cooking?
Well, I don't know, Ray. You know, I was coming across this content, and I immediately thought of you. I don't know if you've heard about this. Playboy wants Walmart women. Have you heard about this?
That one there, too?
Yeah. Well,
hey, why don't we read it together,
Well,
Brad?
No, actually, I have a different version. Mine comes from CNN Money.
Okay, good.
And I got to tell you, the opening line here, you qualify in every area except for two.
If I'm not a female cashier from or a corporate Walmart officer, huh?
Well, you're not a female cashier, and you don't work for Walmart.
And I'm over 18, so that works.
Well,
okay.
And you're not afraid to shed your inhibitions. You do that every Saturday here on the
Yes, I do. Bare your soul, basically, right?
If you have not heard, Walmart and Playboy, they're not getting together because Walmart knew nothing of this.
Right.
But Playboy has decided that if you are a female cashier or corporate officer, and you work at Walmart and you're over the age of 18 and you're not afraid, as we said earlier, to shed your inhibitions in front of a camera, Playboy wants you.
Right.
So
right.
Playboy announced, Playboy.com announced recently it is searching for the sexiest woman at Walmart, and the world's, of course, biggest retailer. Playboy ran a similar theme last year with women of Enron and then more recently women of Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I tell you. You could get scalded during that photo shoot.
You certainly could.
But,
yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, Ray. Of course, Walmart, as we mentioned earlier, was surprised about this announcement.
Gee, I wonder why.
Tom Williams, a spokesperson for Walmart, declined to say whether Walmart would take any action against an employee who decided to take up Playboy on its offer. Of course, they're enjoying the publicity, I'm sure. But I don't know about you, Ray, but if you've ever been to Walmart and you've seen the greeter,
yeah.
I got to believe that you know, most of the greeters I see keep your clothes on.
Exactly.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work. It's an interesting stunt, though.
It's been a while since I've seen a Playboy, but I remember that with the photo shoot, they usually have likes and dislikes of the person they're featuring.
Yes.
Can you imagine the Walmart person they're featuring? Likes, men with all teeth. Dislikes, show-offs who wear braces on their teeth.
Now, be careful what you say about Walmart. They're pretty big, you know.
Well, they are big.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
If you've been in Walmart lately, you realize that most of the women in there, I think, really need to keep their clothes on.
Okay. Is that your opinion and you're sticking to it?
Well, on the other hand, in a few months, we'll get a copy and we'll see if I was right or not.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to happen.
You think they're going to get someone?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I really don't think
so. We'll see what happens.
Good opportunity, though, I suppose.
For who?
Walmart.
Playboy.
And Playboy,
yeah.
And anybody who may bite on that, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the real news. You think we're joking about that, don't you? We're not.
No.
But we are joking about this.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
In a nationally televised address, President George W. Bush revealed that his foreign policy has been an elaborate stunt for the popular MTV series Jackass. Mr. Bush told the nation that he had been a fan of the prank-based television program for some time and had been actively searching for a stunt worthy of the show. The president said he was first inspired to emulate a Jackass stunt in which a prankster poured scalding water on a sleeping friend. But when he sought to play the same prank on Vice President Dick Cheney, Mr. Cheney was nowhere to be found. Instead, Mr. Bush said he had decided to concoct a Jackass-style foreign policy, diverting resources away from the search for Osama bin Laden and towards the invasion of Iraq. While Mr. Bush said this stunt had been a success, he warned viewers, do not, I repeat, do not try this at home. On Capitol Hill, where lawmakers are dealing with Mr. Bush's request for an additional $87 billion for Iraq, the jackass news was surprisingly welcome. When President Bush asked for another $87 billion, I thought he was kidding, said Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle. It's kind of a relief to know that he is. In other news, the CIA said they have high-quality human intelligence, indicating that Osama bin Laden is somewhere we haven't looked yet. The spy agency said that expert analysis of the latest tape of bin Laden indicates that the Al-Qaeda leader is in a foreign place where there are lots of rocks and junk.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
Well, you know that Andy always has something funny to say, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And now he's on CNN on Mondays as well.
Well, you know, I saw him.
He's all over the place.
Just this past Monday, I saw him.
Right.
He's on a little later. It's at 8:30 Central on with Soledad O'Brien.
Yeah.
And that other guy.
Bill Hemmer. Why do we have so much problem remembering their names? I don't understand.
He doesn't quite have the brand that Soledad has.
Who, Bill?
I don't think so. I mean, Soledad O'Brien's much better, much more well-known, don't you think?
Sure, yeah, you're right.
And
Paul Azan's still out there, hanging out there, doing something.
And if you say, did you say Himmel? Is that his name?
Hemmer.
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 See, that's kind of a combination.
He's got an ad. They got a big ad in Ad Age this week. Let me look.
Bill Hemmer, I mean, the last name sounds like somewhere between a large vehicle and a medical condition, don't you think?
Or something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, Soledad,
he's in here anyway.
If you've ever seen Soledad, you know, she's straight out of the Irish boroughs of New York.
Is she really?
Soledad O'Brien.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so at all, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Hey, buying TV show time, possibly you would be interested in that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Monday Night Football comes in at number 10, 272,000 for a 30-second spot.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, buy a few at that price. My God.
Well, you get a break if you buy two.
I'm sure they will. You've got Fox 24, the show. Fox The Simpsons at number 8. CBS, the CSI show. Coupling, NBC has Coupling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's at 316,000 a spot.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. NBC has Scrubs, which is a good show, and that's only 360. CBS, again, with Survivor, and they're still at 390. Actually down a little bit, too, which to me tells that there's a trend going here with those
right.
types of shows. Then you've got ER, NBC's Will and Grace, and the top of the pack is, and the top of the price is NBC with Friends with $473,000 per spot.
And you know the big rap. If you're not familiar with network pricing, there you go. 30s go for, you know, $200,000-$400,000 a spot. The big rap, of course, on network television is
mm-hmm.
audience eroding, going down.
Sure.
Prices going up.
Going up, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So figure that out.
Sounds like something, I was going to say something from the Republican administration, but I'm not going to say that, okay? That would be bad.
Right.
Jerry Delafamina coming up next here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Mix from Purina, the cat food with three separate flavors.
We are here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth and our special guest today, Jerry Delafamina. And there's a reason we're playing that spot.
is because that is one of Jerry's spots. Jerry was recently named by Advertising Age as one of the 100 most influential advertising people of the century. Trading in the title of employee for employer, Jerry co-founded Della Femina, Travassino and Partners, or Travassano and Partners, in 1967. Over time, the agency became one of the top 20 agencies in the United States, with billings over 800 mil, and produced some of the most successful advertising running during the advertising creative revolution. Did you know about that, Brad?
Well, it was in the 60s.
Yes, it was. The advertising built such successful brands as Beck's Beer, good beer, Ralston Purina's Meow Mix, Isuzu, good mix. You like that too?
Oh yeah.
Isuzu, good cars. Dow Bathroom Cleaner and Blue Nun Wine.
Right.
Stiller and Mara. I could not find one of those spots, by the way.
You
but I was looking for one. I had some other Stiller and Mara stuff.
Yeah.
Hey Jerry, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for taking time out of your busy weekend here to be with us.
Good to be here.
You know, Jerry, Ray mentions that you, among many other clients, developed the campaign for Purina Meow Mix years ago. Were you the one or your agency responsible for developing the jingle that we still hear today?
Yeah, it's an interesting story about the jingle. Actually, there was a cat swallowing some cat food, actually choking on cat food. And we saw the rushes and we took one look at this and said, you know, what? My partner, actually, Ron Travassano, said, what if we put music to it? And it'll look almost as though the cat is singing instead of choking. And besides, nobody wants to look at the choking cat commercial. So you know, we put music to it, and you know, set it up, and we had the client said, "Great, let's go." And we went to the studio, and we had booked a singer to sing that meow 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 song, and she never showed up. And there was woman there who was a pickup singer who just happened to be by, and we said, do you want to do it? And she said, sure. And she put two kids through college based on that wonderful moment.
Was she was she union?
We don't talk about that.
Yeah, I guess not. I guess not. That's very interesting. So,
yeah.
You know, most people may not be aware that usually if you're going to create an animal to mimic something, you do the music first or the words, and then you have the animal match to the words. But apparently in your case, you decided you needed some kind of music, I guess, to go with what you were seeing there.
Well, it would give us the impression that the cat was really singing. You know, we had produced three commercials for Ralston, and this was just a piece of footage that we were staring at, and this cat was just, you know, kept choking. The cat did not die. We did the cat Heimlich maneuver.
Thank you very much. I was going to ask that question. I'm glad you volunteered that information.
It's a lot tougher to do the cat Heimlich maneuver because you wind up with scratches on your arm.
Well, and then you get cat balls and all kinds, or hair balls rather.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you know, Jerry, I was going to ask you, it certainly is a testament to consistency as well as creative brilliance to hear. Just the other day I heard I saw a TV spot that included that same jingle. Is it the fact that the client is smart enough to know how to stick with a brand once they've created it, such as the Meow Mix jingle?
Or absolutely. What do you dumb enough to fire us, smart enough to run the commercial.
Shoot, I saw that spot last night on TV.
Yeah. Well, that spot goes back to the 70s, so you can imagine that. And it's interesting. They brought Joe Isuzu back too.
Yeah.
So we sort of lead the league in losing accounts, and then having somebody go to work for the client and say, "Hey, man, this was pretty good work. Let's run it again."
You know,
but let's not call up the Della Femina agency. Let's give it to another agency.
You know, I think it's difficult to resurrect Joe Isuzu once you gave him the hook. But with Meow Mix, they've stuck with that brand and that execution. Yeah. Why do you think so many companies today tend to change up their brand image or their jingle or whatever instead of sticking with something consistently, as Meow Mix says?
Well, it's the age and the time. You know, my dad worked at the New York Times in the composing room for 49 years. I've never held a job more than 2 years. This goes for brand managers too. I mean, what they do is at this point, they switch jobs. And so this is the plight of the advertising world, because you're always in trouble. You pick up a new account and you do some work. And let's say you do a Meow Mix and it really works and it's great. So the guy who is the client, he gets a promotion, usually promoted outside of that brand and maybe goes up or gets a job someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
In comes a new guy. He doesn't want to live with something someone else did. He wants to create his own little starring commercial. So he basically starts questioning everything that was done before, whether it was successful or not. And so finally they dump it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a third guy and says, you know, I got to do something different than the second guy. I know what. I'll go back to what that first commercial that worked.
Mm-hmm.
So what really happens is that there's so much moving around in the business that, you know, it used to be that you could keep an account for a lot of years. Now, you know, within 2 to 3 years, the person who brought you in is gone and you're out of it. You know, I just had I had a wonderful piece of business called AARP. We were doing the magazine, AARP magazine, and they brought in a new marketing director, and she didn't even bother to call us. She just changed agency.
No kidding.
So it happens, you know, and hopefully you have enough friends out there who will hire you. But I think the biggest single problem is people are so mobile in around the marketing area. They're changing jobs. They don't want to stay with the same agency. They want to have their own agency.
Well, in this over-communicated world that we live in, do you think it's there's a greater need to return to the basics of communication today than ever before?
Well, I think that it's great, but I don't want to preach the past. Frankly, you know, the future's pretty good, and there, you know, I'm not one of these people who is saying, oh, God, we were better in the good old days. I think there are some tremendously talented people.
You think the good old days is still going to happen, too, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the good
in
old
the future.
Days will come back if it's worth it. But, you know, the real thing is I think that there are a lot of talented young people, and, you know, you said, well, you're going to have to tell some people who are 24 and 25 about Jerry Dolphin. I mean, that's good. That's terrific because they have their own world. They want to do their own things, and some of them are talented and will do great advertising. Advertising didn't stop with the Creative Revolution. You know,
mm-hmm.
The Creative Revolution came and went, and every revolution, with the exception, I guess, of Castro, the guy who starts the revolution dies.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we are really, you know, there's a whole group of us, and George Lois and Ed McCabe and a lot of people who were back in the Creative Revolution. I think I'm the only one still working in advertising. I'm the only one who still loves it.
Right.
But I get up every day and I'm into it. I love it. I enjoy it. It's fun. I'm surrounded by great young people, and that's the whole thing. Is, you know, you have to just look for young people and just keep reinventing yourself.
So did you come out of the creative end, Jerry?
Yes, I was a copywriter,
mm-hmm.
and creative director,
mm-hmm.
and spent most of my time working as I'm still a working copywriter. I still write ads. Wrote mm-hmm. an ad just 2 days ago.
So your approval is with the client as opposed to internally?
My approval actually is with God.
We're going to take a break.
I go beyond client.
Jerry, I want to talk to you about the good old days of advertising back in the 60s, because I think a lot of people wonder how advertising has changed and if it's for the better or for the worse, and we'll get into that after the break.
It's the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth here, and our special guest Jerry Dellafamina out of New York this weekend. We're talking to Jerry, and we're going to take a break. Got the Wacky World of Marketing coming up next here later on this hour. We've got some bad advertising for you, right?
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
We'll do that in just a minute. Stay with us on the Advertising Show.
For the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Iceland, where a mystery British tycoon is reportedly lining up a bid for a penis museum in Iceland. The Icelandic Phallological Museum is up for sale, and it's understood there's an interested British buyer. The museum hosts a collection of penis specimens from all native Icelandic animals. Now, they've historically received annual grants from the city of Reykjavik to maintain the museum, but they did not receive any funding this year. Thus, the museum was put up for sale. Now, it's the most talked about museum in the country and the only one of its kind in the world. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and, unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
My dog's better than your dog. My dog's better than yours. My dog's better 'cause he gets kennel ration. My dog's better than yours. My dog's bigger than your dog. My dog's smarter than yours. My dog's better 'cause he gets kennel
ration. We are back on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth, and our special guest is Jerry Della Famina today, talking to Jerry out of New York. Let's see, we've got a board member of WNYC, we've got the Children's Society, the City Meals on Wheels, Lighthouse International, the Brooklyn Public Library, and Jerry's taken some time out of his busy weekend to spend some time with us. Jerry, it's good to have you on The Advertising Show.
Good to be here.
You know, before the last segment, we were talking about the good old days of the 60s, the so-called creative revolution, as we talk about it. And, you know, a lot of creative folks back in those days talk about the big idea. We play a lot of classic commercials here on The Advertising Show, those familiar with our show. We'll hear that every segment, as you just did from, what was that, Oscar Mayer, Ray?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, Jerry, commercials back in the 60s, were they a reflection of more simple times for America and consumers, or were the spots just more effective and more breakout than they are today?
Well, we had a few pressures on us. I mean, the world has changed. When I started doing commercials, you know, it was a creative revolution, and a client would sit there and say, you know, wow, this is great. You turned out some wonderful stuff. Clients are really a lot more bottom-line oriented. They have changed. And the reason client has changed is that the company chairman has changed. You know, when I was first in the advertising business, you met the company chairman and you would ask, are you having a good year?
Hmm.
Then it became, are you having a good 6 months? Then it was, are you having a good month? Then you went to them and say, well, you know, are you having a good week? And now, you know, the client is standing there, and thanks to computers and everything else, you have to call them and say, are you having a good day?
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to micromanage something, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's changed, and the clients are more nervous. And the, you know, the bottom line is really much. You know, they don't build brands anymore. They'll take a brand at one point and they'll milk it, even though it has some life in it, simply because they need the money for the bottom line. So it's a different business. It's not as creative. I should say this. It is as creative, but it's not as easy to get creative.
So
as people these days.
Do you think, Jerry, there's less risk takers today than there were 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, by far, you know, the risk takers are gone from the business. You know, what happened is too much depends on success or failure. There was a time when someone could say, we're building this brand, and today it's instant. We want instant gratification. We want instant sales.
Is there some good middle ground, though, Jerry, between what used to be and what is today?
I don't know, because I think that right now most people in marketing, on the marketing side of the picture, are not going to take any chances. They're going to research stuff, and I believe in research. I'm a great believer in research, but they want it to be perfect. It's got to work. Blue Nun, when we first started Blue Nun, which is a tremendous success. I mean, it built a brand that was selling 50,000 cases of wine a year, into a brand that was selling over 1,400,000 cases.
Wow.
It's a great, great success story. But, you know, frankly, you know, today we would go in there and say we want to use Stiller in the Mirror, and we want to do some funny commercials, and we're going to talk about Blue Nun, the delicious white wine that goes with everything. And somebody would say to you, well, you know, this is, you know, we don't want to take that chance. You know, we're not going to Stiller in the Mirror, they were a young comedy team. No one knew them.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to take a chance on our agency. Our agency at the time was very young. So what would happen is it would never happen. As it turned out, with Stiller and Mirror, the commercials were running, and nothing really much happened the first 2-3 months. and I thought it was going to die. And then one day, the chairman of Blue Nun, a man by the name of Bill Shefflin, went to a Christmas party. And at the Christmas party, someone came up to him and said, "Bill, I love your commercials for Blue Nun." So he loved our commercials for Blue Nun. He gave us another 3 months, and sales just took off.
So who did you arrange to have go up and say that to that guy?
I got to tell you, that's my plan, really. In the future, I'm going to have someone go up to it.
Yeah.
Christmas parties is where you score your big points.
Absolutely. So give us a little insight behind the scenes of how you decided on Stellar and Mirror for that campaign.
Well, many years before that, I was in New York City, and you know, it was '60s, and it was fun, and you went out and you drank every night, and you did all the things that you don't do anymore.
Well,
and,
Ray still
I happened
that.
To I'll go into that. A small nightclub, and there was this comedy team, no one had ever heard of it, and they were really funny. And I walked up to them at the end of their act, and I saw them at the bar, and I said, "One of these days, I'm going to use you in a commercial." And I did. It's interesting with Stellar Mirror, we tried four different comedy people. We tried Shelley Berman, who was a big comedian of the 60s.
Yeah.
We tried Joan Rivers. We tried Louis Nye, who was a big, and then we tried Stellar Mirror. And Stellar Mirror just was a total sensation.
Look at the lasting power of the Stellar and Mirror brand. My God, they're still hot on TV
today.
They're
still hot. They're hotter than ever. And they gave us Ben Stiller.
And what I was going to say, for our younger listeners, that's Ben Stiller's mother and father.
Mommy and daddy, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, we got to take a break here just a minute, Jerry. Can you stick with us here?
Absolutely.
On the advertising show, Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth, and our special guest, a very special one, Jerry Delafamina out of New York. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth are taking your questions at theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
When you say but, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say. When you say but, you've gone as far as you can go to get the very best. When you say but,
we are back on the advertising show. How can we go the weekend without
a
Budweiser commercial, right? There
we go. I thought you meant a Bud.
Or a Bud.
Yeah.
That'd work, too.
Yeah.
Jerry Delafamina, our special guest today. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, when Jerry was talking last segment, about going out and drinking every night, but you don't do that anymore, he apparently does not know your lifestyle.
Oh, really?
I just like to get you in trouble when I can.
And you know, you do that constantly. That's okay.
Well, your wife listens.
Because the people who really know me
know
you're full of it.
Well, your wife listens and going, so you've been out working lately.
Yes,
yeah.
I have.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Every now and then. Hey, Jerry, thanks for
being
a part.
I don't go out late anymore. I go out earlier.
You go earlier?
Yeah. Well, you got to.
Happy hour starts at what time, too? Is that right?
Sure.
We call it dark 30 here, which is any time afternoon. You know, Jerry writes for the Independent. You're also, I guess, either a part owner or full owner of the publication out in the Hamptons.
Yes, I actually own four newspapers.
The Southampton, the West Hampton, the East Hampton, and the Riverhead Norfolk Independent.
It sounds like Jerry's getting into FCC violation territory.
Yeah,
what do you think?
I think he is.
Yeah, probably so.
Every time I look in the mirror, I see Rupert Murdoch looking back at me.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Well, I did a little homework here and read some of your Jerry's Inc., which is your column that you do in the Independent publications, all four. And there was one, a belated happy birthday to you, by the way, Jerry. July 22nd was his birthday. And apparently he interviewed himself, but he played as the reporter. This is a nice little funny thing.
Oh, that's
here.
Great.
It says, Jerry the reporter, how old are you? Jerry the birthday boy, none of your damn business. Let me just say this. I'm so old that I cannot look with lust at any woman under the age of 50 without feeling like a pedophile, which I thought was a very, very interesting way of characterizing that, Jerry. You know, we had George Lois. You mentioned George Lois as one of the icons and legends in the business back in the 60s from your day as well, and certainly I'd include you in that same description. Is there a distinctive characteristic of advertising created by Jerry Delafamina?
Well, I think there is something that I do. I mean, I want to win, and what I do is look for a headline. I used to be a door-to-door salesman, and I used to sell vacuum cleaners door to door. I learned early on that when I knocked on that door, I just had the woman would just give me 15 seconds, and I had to say something really great that first 15 seconds. She was going to slam the door in my face, and that's my headline.
All right.
And then the second thing I learned was if I showed up at the door well-dressed, she would open up the door a little wider, but if I wasn't well-dressed, she would be nervous, and she'd keep the door closed. That's art direction. And then, you know, then I would talk to this woman, and never try to talk down to her, and talk to her quietly, and just make point by point. That's body copy. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I didn't know, but they taught me, they said, Jerry, never try to sell vacuum cleaners in a neighborhood that doesn't have carpeting. And that's media.
Right. That's funny.
So, that's been my formula.
I mean, what kind of vacuum cleaners did you sell, Jerry?
I was selling Hoover.
Okay. Hmm.
And when you wore your Speedos, would that be considered your logo? I'm just trying to be funny here. How did you decide upon a career in advertising, Jerry?
I was a messenger. I would deliver advertising copy. I was a messenger for the New York Times, and I would pick up and I'd have a route going through from advertising agency to advertising agency picking up copy. And I would go into these places. I was a kid and I was broke, and I would go into these places and I would see guys with their feet up on the desk. Hmm. And being a bit of a lazy kid, I'd say, what does that guy do?
Yeah.
And they'd say, he's a copywriter. Right. And I'd go, wow. And then they'd say, he makes $30,000 a year.
Whoa.
And I'd say, wow. And so the copywriter was born. I actually looked for 7 years before I found my first job. I did a lot of things. I was, you name it, and I did it. I was a soda jerk, and I was I worked as a shipping clerk, and I tried just about everything in town. But I finally got a job in an advertising agency.
Where was your first job, Jerry?
It was an agency called Daniel and Charles. Daniel and Charles was a very sort of a creative agency at the time. They were at the time looking at George Lois, saying, "Now we want to be like George Lois." So I got the job at Daniel and Charles. It was an unfortunate name, Daniel and Charles, because I once met a woman at a bar, and she said, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm at Daniel and Charles." And she said, "I hated the way they did my hair the last time."
That's
funny. They need a new name.
Well, and you right. broke the mold as well, because back in those days, the Italian guys were the art directors, right?
Right. I was one of the first Italian, if not the first Italian copywriter, because I'm one of the few Italian people who can draw.
Mm-hmm. Can you cook, though? Okay, this is a good thing. Hey, we've got to take a break here just a moment. Jerry Della Famina, our special guest, chairman of Della Famina, Rothschild, Jerry, and Partners. By the way, you can go to dfjp.com if you want to find out more. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show, stick around. We'll be right back.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Going to the beach, huh?
Right.
Got Aztec suntan lotion?
No, I've got this stuff.
Oh, not that. Aztec suntan lotion's especially formulated to let you get the tan you want with the protection you need.
Uh-huh.
Want to know how I know about Aztec suntan lotion?
No.
I'm the Aztec sun god.
This is my stuff.
So naturally, I have a great bronze god body.
Nice talking to you.
Let me take off my Aztec sun god shoes and socks here.
Don't do that on the bronze.
Roll up my pants legs.
People are looking here.
See this shin? It's not only golden tan and handsome, but it's been protected and kept moist by Aztec suntan lotion.
Driver, let me off here.
You want to look like this shin? Use the Aztec suntan lotion right for you and do the Aztec suntan dance.
What?
There's a dance you should do when it's sunny.
You can't poke on this bus.
Grab your toe and pull it toward your tummy.
Driver, you passed the beach.
Put your nose on your knee and hop, hop, hop like a big bunny.
Now you're doing the Aztec suntan dance.
How many Aztec suntan lotions you want?
All of them.
Oh, good.
Now we're
doing right.
It.
Open the door now, driver.
Thanks.
Back on the Advertising Show, classic spot, Dick and Bert style, and great advertising for Aztec suntan lotion.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you be the Aztec sun god.
Dick
what a great spot.
Dick Orkin, if you don't know him. If you remember the old days, what was it, the Gap, some of the original Gap commercials?
Mm-hmm.
Fall into the Gap. Remember
mm-hmm.
that?
Yeah.
That was old Dick.
Oh, yeah. They're good.
Yeah, they really
Radio
are.
Radio Ranch.
Yeah.
I was at the gym exercising, and I was watching TV.
Did you pull something?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Just actually got a blister, though.
Uh-oh.
Out-of-home television study to expand. This is what I'm leading up to.
Okay.
After years as the lone wolf, out-of-home television audience measurement, ESPN, ABC Sports, is expanding its research beyond TV sports in inviting the rest of the TV industry to think beyond the couch potatoes, which would be not me. Effective with the 2004 edition of the so-called Total TV Audience Monitor, it's called TTAM, Disney sibling ABC will begin adding data on out-of-home audience of its entertainment shows, which are viewed as such far-flung locations as college dorms, laundromats, gyms, bars. It says gyms, bars is together there, and other venues that are not normally measured by Nielsen. I think that's very good, though.
Well, I think it's a very good point because Nielsen, the diary, or trying to get the in-home meters, people meters, you know, nobody's going to take an Nielsen, rather, to the gym, right?
No,
so you're not getting a true reflection of what's going on.
So the measurement has to kind of move and take a little bit to front seat. I think it is, too.
Yeah.
Every week we feature good and bad advertising. This week, unfortunately, do you have it there?
Yeah, I have it.
You do? Good. Okay, there we go.
And now it's time for the badvertising item of the week.
Hey, this is not to slam the advertisers, so just basically to give you a better option of creating your own stuff, you know, a little inside information. What you got?
Well, we have something from Washington Mutual, which, of course, is a bank, and it's a national ad, and you'll see it across America in your major daily newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing that they have going here, I'm going to go ahead and give them a compliment before we get to the bad part.
Okay.
I think the great part this ad has going for it is it's what we call a fake full. I've been critical of full-page ads because people tend to forget why people read newspapers. It's because of editorial, not for advertising. In many cases, if you have a full-page ad, people cram way too much copy and visual into it. And although they do a decent job of space allocation of graphics and copy here, and they did do a good job of what we call a column short of being full across, and then I would say roughly 5-6 inches short of being full from the top. And what you have is you have two articles, one on the top and one on the side. So you've got that going for you. But here's what I have a problem with on this, Ray. The headline here is Saving the World from Fake Free Checking One Person at a Time. Saving the World from Fake Free Checking One Person at a Time. And then you see it says Truly Free Checking, and you see the logo here, and there's some body copy. Well, you know, okay, so you get what they're saying. They're trying to say our free checking is more free than somebody else's free checking, and you would look at that and you'd go, okay, and you'd say, I got it, and you'd turn the page. Now, down here in this little square, can you see that from there?
Very small.
It's about a 3-inch by 3.5-inch square, and it has 6 lines of copy in it. There is where the ad really needs, I mean, this is the selling part of the ad right here in this little 3-inch by 4-inch box. Let me read what it says.
Looks like an eye chart.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the smallest portion of the ad itself.
In the headline.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Here's what it says in the little box. No monthly fee, no matter what your balance. No direct deposit requirement. No per-check charges. Visa check card with no annual fee. No fee to talk to teller or telephone banker. So there, to me, is the most important part of the strength of this ad.
You're right.
And it's in a 2-inch by 3-inch box.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right there are headlines for 5 different ads.
Yeah.
You know.
Then they got some pictures of some people up at the top, too, it looks like. What is that all about?
Just acting goofy. And you know, so I guess, you know, the message here for everyone listening, especially on the client side, when your agency brings you an ad or, if, heaven forbid, you're developing one yourself, you need to look at the ad from the perspective of the reader who doesn't give a damn about your message.
Yeah.
And you need to ask yourself, does this grab the reader's attention? And are my strengths leading in the copy or in the headline? And if the answer is I'm not sure, then it's probably no, and you need to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Looks like 3 specific people worked on that ad.
Yeah.
And they didn't really agree about the whole ad, so they said, oh, what the heck, we'll just use it the whole thing. Right?
If you see Washington Mutual, you see an ad that says saving the world from fake free checking one person at a time, look at the little small square and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I'd be curious to see whether that was a local ad or a national ad.
No, it's a national ad.
It is a national ad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They can even screw up on a national level.
So now you know.
Can you imagine?
Don't do that, okay? The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth is being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. You can visit Advertising Age online at adage.com. And, of course, we invite you to visit us here on The Advertising Show at theadvertisingshow.com. That's where we also stream our show live. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production, heard nationally on the SSI Radio Network.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production here on the SSI Radio Network with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe and our special guest this hour. And his name is Jerry Delafamina out of New York. We'll be talking to Jerry here just a little while. This is a jam-packed hour, too. We've got Patrick Meyer with Fusion 5 coming up with his segment of the show. Later on this hour, Jeffrey Gittimer, The Wacky World of Marketing. Just absolutely so much stuff that you can hang on to and possibly even learn something by listening. So stay with us.
A plethora.
We do have that,
content,
too. Oh,
yes.
We've got...
Yes.
Yes, I've got my plethora file right here.
Yeah, I've got a little plethora right here on my shirt.
Love that word.
Hey, you know, I brought this in for you, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Knight Ridder Tribune News has a syndicated piece that they run throughout many major newspapers across America called Focus My Pet World.
Okay.
And I know you're a dog lover.
Sure.
And, of course, my wife, who does volunteer work at the animal shelter most weekends, at least that's where she tells me she's going. Anyway, we have three dogs. You have how many, Ray?
Three dogs.
Yeah.
Right.
I saw
maximum allowable limit.
Exactly. We have the city regulations that's keeping us from having four. That's the only reason.
You're not a petting zoo, huh?
No. I have to start charging admission over there. But this is interesting. I saw this piece. This has nothing to do with advertising, so just hang in there.
Okay.
Dog needs to learn to live with the toaster. And the writer is written in it, says, our dog is afraid of the toaster. When she hears it, she tries to climb into my husband's lap trembling. And I'm looking at this going, Lard, did you write this? Because we have a dog.
That's afraid of the toaster.
One of the three is, yeah, it's afraid of the toaster. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? Well, here's the response to this, because I thought it was rather interesting here. Dogs develop all sorts of inappropriate fears, says this particular author of a book. I'm not going to plug it because we plug too many books on this show anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it says that the author says that you should first try to desensitize your dog to the toaster itself, place the toaster in various places around the house, etc. And this is the part I brought in for you. If your dog sleeps with you in bed,
mm-hmm.
sleep with the toaster.
Jesus.
That's what it says. And I know you have – do all your dogs or just one?
Just one.
One dog
yeah.
sleeps in the bed with you and your wife, right?
Right.
You know, if you were to sleep in the bed with the toaster and the dog,
mm-hmm.
do they want it plugged in?
I don't know. I hope not. That's a fire safety violation, I think.
Hey, honey, it was a very electrifying night last night. But, I mean, wouldn't that be weird to put, you know,
put your toaster in the bed?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if your dog was afraid of, like, your motorcycle, that'd be even tougher, wouldn't it?
Well, and what would be interesting, if you did do the toaster, it would be like, what are these breadcrumbs?
That'd be awful. Hey, I have a new dog snack. Welcome to the dog show, folks.
Yeah.
Ice cubes. The dogs love ice cubes.
Especially in the summer down here in our home state of Texas.
Yeah. Try them. They get real excited about ice cubes.
And no calories.
No.
No hidden...
low carbs. If they're doing the Atkins diet, they can be right in line with that, too.
True.
Perfect. It's probably bad for their teeth, though.
But, you know, if you do that, and I've tried that before, and we have a couple that do like it. One dog looks at you like, you think you're going to fake me out with the cold ice frozen?
Mine haven't figured that out yet.
But you have to be careful, because usually you will have a little puddle where the dog, we have tile in our home, so you right. It can get slippery.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing we're talking about advertising the rest of the show.
Yeah.
This is our dog segment.
Well,
here.
Actually, you know, if you strap a sign on a dog, that's called out-of-home, it's called alternative out-of-home mm-hmm. advertising.
Experiential.
So there's your
like
tie-in right there.
There you go. All right. It's time for Patrick Meyer on the Advertising Show. Here he is.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Here's what you do if you want to be a marketing hero and turn your business around. And it starts at retail. Get into the store with consumers immediately. Map out how they think, where they go, what they're passionate about. Understand that retail experience for them. At Fusion 5, we do it with hidden cameras. We go on shopping sprees with consumers, identify points of interruption, and understand how they shop. We make it real fun. We learn an incredible amount and bring it back to our clients. In the last 2 weeks, I spent time walking with young adults through their stores focused on beverages and snacks. What do they want? Simple. Fresh new ideas, new packages, innovative and intriguing things for them and their friends. They want it to be fun. They want it to be experiential. And oh, by the way, make sure it's convenient and there's a bit of value that's there.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
Always some good advice from Patrick, too. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense, too. The in-store cameras, huh?
Well, if you're a retailer.
They're not security cameras either, folks.
Yeah, true. If you're a retailer, it's great advice.
Absolutely.
Ray, we had some newspaper. We had some people. Who was it? Joe Capo was talking about newspaper and how newspaper has not had any innovation since. His quote is, the last innovation in the newspaper business? Air conditioning in the press room. Remember
right.
that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, apparently the Orange County Register launched a TV print and outdoor campaign recently called Take Back the Morning, which the campaign is designed to express the thoughts, feelings, and experiences associated with reading the newspaper. And the campaign is targeting 25 to 35-year-olds who understand the inherent value or wanting them to understand the inherent value of reading a newspaper but do not understand the rewards of taking a few minutes out of a busy morning to relax and enjoy the newspaper. I don't know about you, Ray, but is it a matter of, newspapers are struggling with trying to get young people to read the paper?
Sure they are.
Shouldn't they be looking at the paper itself rather than an ad campaign and maybe look at the medium and say, what do we need to change about our paper as opposed to advertising and making thinking that you can get young people to begin to have a media habit that they didn't have before? I mean, just because of an ad?
Yeah, exactly. They're starting one step ahead of themselves is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, get your product right first, and then maybe an ad campaign. But, I mean, if it had the appeal to begin with, you wouldn't be looking at, trying to advertise to the 25 to 35-year-old to get them to read the paper because they'd already be reading it.
I don't know anybody who relaxes with the paper in the morning except maybe on the weekend or something like that.
Well, I was going to say, you'd have to
be
on vacation.
Office,
yeah, I read the paper in the evening if I read it at all, or Wall Street Journal, but I don't read it in the morning. I think most people don't.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Well, I say most people.
Well, that's where you're catching your news on the CNNs and the Foxes and things like that.
Or on the radio.
Or on the Bloombergs or on the radio.
Exactly. Radio on the way to work. Yeah. And by the time, of course, you read the paper in the evening, you know most of it.
That's right.
You've already caught that.
Because the ink is dry.
Well, I had to print it the night before, so.
Have you seen about the wireless application for television channel surfing, either during a primetime show or on the weekends? You notice a growing trend in text message voting behind actually being tied into the TV shows, like American Idol. They started that trend. Daytime Emmy Awards did it recently. Mm-hmm. And now Major League Baseball ties in viewer opinion to a baseball game. They have an example here. Should the Atlanta Braves pitcher Greg Maddux be taken out of the game? If now, if yes, press 1. If no, press 2.
That's funny.
Isn't that interesting?
So do you see it on MLB.com, or where do you go for the results? Or do they show it on screen there, I wonder?
I think they show it on screen. I think that's – I'm looking at the whole article here. It doesn't say –
Getting viewers to participate, interact with the TV is
sure.
a big deal nowadays.
Yeah.
And, being able to vote who's she going to date of the five guys she has in front of him, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting way to engage the viewer. But, I always wonder, who are these people voting? I mean, I'm not. Are you?
No.
So it's like,
no.
what is the sample? Who are these people that are participating?
Who's the demographic?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've got Jerry Delafamina coming up in just a minute here on The Advertising Show. Lots to come this hour. Stay with us. Ray and Brad.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
Coca-Cola, things go better with Coca-Cola, things go better with Coke. Life is much more fun when you're refreshed.
And Coke refreshes you best.
It's the refreshingest.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings along with Brad Forsyth and our special guest today, Jerry Delafamina. If you feed your cat Meow Mix, If you drive an Isuzu, if you use Dow bathroom cleaner, enjoy a glass of Blue Nun wine every now and then, or possibly a Beck's beer, there's a good chance that the reason you do that is because you heard one of Jerry's ads in Creative Concepts. Jerry Delafamina, our special guest here on the Advertising Show. Jerry, thanks for taking time out of your weekend to be a part of it.
Good to be here.
Jerry, I wanted to ask you, are you a big fan of using celebrities in commercials today?
I am. I'll tell you why. I think it's very tough. You've got 30 seconds, and you want to get someone's attention. When you use a celebrity, that's first, you have immediate recognition. You know, they say, oh, that's, you know, whomever. Let me pick a football player. That's Brett Favre. You know, he does this, he stands for this, he's a strong guy, he's a tough guy. So you've got your whole message just by a look at the star. Hmm. And then you could sometimes turn your message around the star and sort of having do something that sort of is a little bit offbeat, a little different than you would expect him to do. And let's face it, sports stars, movie stars, they're the people who get everyone's attention.
Is it a little risky today to use a celebrity, do you think?
Well, I think after you finish using them, you have to kill them so they don't get in trouble.
Kobe.
It is risky. It is risky. I can't begin to tell you. I had a client who told me he never wanted a celebrity because they're going to get into trouble. And I won't tell you the name of the star because it's someone who's a friend of mine. But I proposed this person and he said, absolutely not. And I said, this person can never get into trouble. Well, sure enough, the person got into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is you can't be with them all the time. And, you know, they do represent your product. But, you know, for the most part, unless they do something really outlandish, I mean, if they... It's worth the risk.
It's amazing what America is willing to put up with as far as behavior among celebrities, and it won't tarnish the client's product or service. But, you know, back
what happened to O.J., though.
Well, yeah, that's the example.
We have to make an exception in O.J.'s case.
Right. Okay.
I think he tarnishes the product.
Yeah, I think you're
he
right.
was, and little did they know when he was running through the airport, it had nothing to do with the Hertz.
That's right.
He was running for – anyway, you mentioned as you were describing the use of celebrity and I think a lot of people have lost sight of this today, which is putting a celebrity in an unusual circumstance or a situation that really cuts through the clutter out there today. What Ray and I have talked about numerous times here on the show is that, you know, using a celebrity in an obvious position, I think, is a no-brainer, and it really needs to start with a big idea first. Don't you think, Jerry?
Absolutely. The idea is the most important part of the commercial. Finding someone to do it, to execute it, finding somebody is gilding the lily. I must say that it's even better to make a celebrity. In the case of Joe Isuzu,
mm-hmm.
David Leisure, the actor who we had, had two jobs in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
He had played a monk in the movie Airplane, and he had a commercial for a telephone company in New Jersey, period. Those were his only two jobs. Lived in his Volkswagen. He did. But we built him up, and he became Joe Isuzu.
Mm-hmm.
And with the first commercial we gave him, we got him to do three commercials, and he did the three commercials for $5,000, and he was really, really so pleased to get it. When we were about, I guess it was commercial number 27 or 28, we offered him $500,000, and he turned us down.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
He caught on. It
was great, you know, and I even loved the idea that he was doing so well that he could, you know, say, no, I want more.
Hmm.
And he was worth it.
What about the Verizon guy? He's doing pretty good as far as a brand for
Verizon.
Oh, that's
great. Mm-hmm. Actually, a young man named Rich Levy, who works with me at Delphine Rothschild Jury, did that commercial.
Really?
And invented that guy, yeah.
What's his position?
He's a creative director, and we've started an agency around him,
mm-hmm.
called Tenny Levy. And because I believe that I want to be really starting a lot of small agencies and investing in a lot of perhaps mature agencies that are having a little tough time going. I'd like to start a mini conglomerate. You know, I'm I love the business, and if I'm going to be in it, I want to be successful in it.
Well, that's an interesting idea. You mentioned about creating a celebrity. I think Wendy's, the old lady, Where's the Beef, and,
of course,
the more recent example, the late CEO for Wendy's.
Dave, who was created
out of commercials itself. Has there ever been a celebrity that you wanted for a campaign, Jerry, that you were unable to get?
Oh, there are a number of them that turn you down. You know, you never could get a Woody Allen or someone like that to do a commercial. Now, they will do it in a foreign country. They do it in Japan,
yeah.
A lot of top stars won't do it. And I've used celebrities. You know, one turned out to be a disaster because I used Jennifer O'Neill, who was an actress in the great movie The Summer of 42.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer was terrific. And I used her for a hair commercial. And we shot the commercial on Long Island. And it was one of those sort of damp days. And the first take was, she looked so beautiful. And we said, that's really good. But, you know, we flopped a little bit. We missed this. And by the second one, I said, oh, we better comb out her hair. And by the third one, I said, "Geez, her hair's getting a little it's curly." And by the seventh or eighth commercial, she had by the seventh or eighth take, she had an afro, and we were selling hair product. And we had that. We lost that account.
Yeah.
It was L'Oreal.
Well, it's easy to laugh about it now, isn't it, Jerry?
Well, you know, I've lost just about every account there is out there. I'm going at them for seconds these days.
Well, and if you've been in the business long enough, you win accounts and you lose them, right, Jerry?
Then don't you get some back?
My partner, Ron Trevor Sandler, one day we had a new account, and we got it. They said, you're our agency. We shook hands. They said, we'll go to the first meeting. And we went to the first meeting. We sat down, and you know, they talked. They were perfectly fine. At the coffee break, they said, let's take a coffee break. And my partner came up to me and said, I think we're in trouble on this account. And he just got it. He said, I don't like the way they're looking at it.
Yeah.
Did you lose it?
We eventually lost it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, you lose them. You know what breaks your heart? It's, you know, when you build them and when something really grows and then you lose it, it is a heartbreak.
Yeah, it really is.
But, you know, this is a business where there's always tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of accounts out there. And if you keep plugging, you're going to get more business.
Right. Let's shift gears here. We've got a few minutes left. You know, we've discussed with friends and colleagues about the politics of advertising here on the show and the struggle an agency has in getting an idea accepted. And yet in its final stage, Jerry, in many cases, the execution is not really the way the idea was originally conceived. Have you experienced this? And what do you feel compromises a lot of the creative strategy and development throughout the process?
Well, I think you have to have a real idea. I don't think you can say we're going to save it when we shoot it. I don't think you're going to say, you know, what we're going to do is find a star who's going to make this work. I don't think you could say, oh, you know, it will work out once we take the photographs. So if it's a great idea, it's going to be a great idea as a storyboard or as something. And so you have to do that. Too many people hope, you know, we're in the miracle business, but we find ourselves when we make commercials hoping for miracles ourselves. You know, something's going to change this commercial. It doesn't look that good right now, but boy, wait till we fix it.
We're going to take a break here, Jerry, for just a minute. Hang on to that thought. Jerry Delafamina, chairman of Delafamina Rothschild, Jerry and Partners, dfjp.com is his website. Want to go there and take a look at that, too, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. The Wacky World of Marketing on the way next. Later on this hour, we've got Jeffrey Ginnemer, super salesman, with us, too, so stay with us.
Time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to the Ukraine, where if you're hungry, you can try a fat in chocolate. A Ukrainian candy company has begun marketing what may be the stickiest, richest, and most fattening treat on the market. Pure pork fat covered in chocolate. Cracking open a finger-sized stick of fat in chocolate reveals exactly that. A white vein of fat. The dark chocolate product pokes fun at the traditional Ukrainian snack of selo, or salted pork fat, usually consumed with vodka and pickles. And that, my friends, is the fattening and wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Here's to good friends. Tonight is kind of special. The beer will pour. Must say something more somehow. So tonight, let it be Lone Brown.
Let it be Lone Brown.
It's been so long. Hey, I'm glad to see you.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth, and our guest today is Jerry Delafamina, chairman of Delafamina Rothschild, Jerry and Partners out of New York. And lots of good conversation going on here today, Brad.
Yeah.
Jerry, it's nice to have you on the show.
I'm having fun.
Legendary copywriter. Let's stay with the creative subject for a while here. I would imagine, Jerry, when you were younger, clients would look at your youth and creativity as a positive and embrace many of your thoughts and ideas on advertising. Yet today, less experienced creative is probably viewed with a deal of a bout of a skepticism, I would imagine. Do you think it's a fair characterization for people to be more skeptical of young people as opposed to the more experienced creatives today?
I think it's a mistake. I think that young people, if they're great, they're going to be great. They're going to do a good job for you, and they have enthusiasm. I think, you know, to look for them. There are some people who are very mature and look really good who will never do a good ad in their lives. So I think you there are a lot of things you just, as a client, should just ignore.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the youth of the person, it's the way, it's if they can write. Or conversely, it's not the age of the person, it's if they can write. Forget those things. You know, because I always tell people who are over 50 who are looking for work in advertising, I say, hey, you know, dye your hair, dye your beard, lie about your age.
Yeah.
You know, don't let them take away your livelihood because you happen to be 51 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm big about lying to potential employees.
Well, let's say
about age.
Well, let's say that you're a junior creative and you're listening to Jerry Delafamina, and you're trying to establish credibility and authority both with your agency or with a client. What would you suggest? How do you go about that?
Well, first of all, I think it's all in the quality of the work that you do. I think that a lot of people put on, you know, an act and start to adopt a persona that is not themselves. I think you just have to be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important that you have to make sense, and you have to learn how to talk up in a meeting. You know, sitting there very quiet saying, you know, you've got it, you know, as a salesman, I learned how to talk, and I became a copywriter who could sell his own work. I think it's really important for young creative people to be able to sell their own work.
You know, we've heard from many George Lois, we've heard from Phil Dusenberry, and people like yourself, and I think that's what's missing today. And just what you said, in that you can be creative, but you really know how to sell your. You have to know how to sell your concepts. In a lot of cases, that's missing today, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's missing. I think that they should be teaching this.
I think
part of an advertising copy course should be selling your work to the rest of the class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And standing up there and making a presentation.
No different than selling a vacuum cleaner, is it, Chair?
You know, it's the same thing. I happen to think, you know, I love the title of being a writer and all this wonderful stuff, but I'm a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the first salesman they get to see before they even leave their home.
And, you know, in a lot of cases, selling is really about communicating, and it's not about techniques where you try to manipulate words around to get somebody to do something. It's really just about sharing with someone else from a just a basic English standpoint. What are you trying to get across, and what should I expect from my ad? Let's talk about
enthusiasm. There's got to be a great sense of enthusiasm so that you're really with it.
You know, that's a good point as well. We've heard from many. I mean, let's face it, Jerry, if it's not a great idea, then let's not present it to the client, right? And if you're not enthusiastic about it, how in the hell you expect your client to be?
Absolutely. You've got to be there. You've got to be excited. You've got to sell. I mean, the best salesmen are, first of all, tell the truth, and second, sell.
Mm-hmm. So who does Jerry Delafamina admire most in the advertising industry today?
Oh, George Lois, who I think is great. I think Phil Dusenberry was one of the great, great advertising people. I think Donnie Deutsch, who has his own agency, and Richard Kirschenbaum, two fine agencies out of New York, are terrific creative people. And, you know, they would be just as comfortable in another era as they are right now.
Well, we had Donnie on the show last week, and he was definitely a great guest and had a lot of great things to say. And he's, mid-40s, and I don't know, for those that aren't familiar with Donnie Deutsch, I guess the agency a few years ago was acquired by Interpublic. And the way I understand it, Jerry, Donnie has 150, maybe 200 million reasons to enjoy the business.
You know what? It's a great business. You should make a lot of money from it. You know, I always wanted, my dream when I was a kid, because I came from a poor background, my dream was someday I'm gonna make $12,000 a year.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be a very, well, my first job interview at Daniel and Charles was interesting, because I went in and I said, I'll work for nothing. And, you know, and he said, and Daniel Karsh, the owner, said, no, I've got to give you a token salary. I said, no, I'll work for nothing. Just give me a telephone so I can call and find out how my family. No, I've got to give you a token salary. I'm going to give you $5,200 a year. And I bit my lip, and he said, is that okay? I said, oh, yeah, it's fine. And I went down in the elevator, and when the elevator hit the bottom floor, hit the lobby, I let out a scream, because that was the most any Delafamina in the history of the Delafamina that I've ever heard. And it was a token salary.
Success.
I think the only louder scream is when you went home and told your parents how much you were making, huh?
My father, I now was making more money than my father, who had been working, you know, for 49 years for the New York Times. Yeah, you know, it's great. It's a great paying business. It's, you know, and of course we die younger. That's what they pay you to die.
We got to take a break here just a moment, Jerry. We'll be back with Jerry Delafamina on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We're going to pay some bills now, so stick around.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee.
Back on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and our special guest, Jerry Delafamina, chairman of Delafamina Rothschild, Jerry & Partners. Talking to Jerry out of New York today, and there's a classic spot from Dinah Shore for Chevrolet. Talk about a television personality who really helped sell a brand way back then.
Yeah,
that was a great brand. That was a great commercial. And I never forget that only 95% of Americans could answer the question, who sponsors the Dinah Shore Chevy show?
Mm-hmm. You know, back in those days,
that's a real number.
Oh, my God.
That's interesting. Of course, back in those days, I guess, Jerry, you run a commercial on ABC, CBS, NBC. You're reaching 95% of America back in the 60s.
Cable's changed all that.
Yeah, it really has. And, of course, back when Dinah was doing that commercial,
didn't have cable.
Well, Burt Reynolds had a full head of hair.
Burt Reynolds was a baby.
Yeah. Well, growing up in New York, Jerry, were you a risk taker as a youngster?
Yes, I always took chances. I always tried to. I got married the youngest of all my friends. No, I always took chances. I think that risk taking is such an important part of life. I don't think you could be a success without taking a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't play the game on the 50-yard line. You really got to try to do something. And I remember as a young man, and I was really broke, and I would go with my wife, and let's say we have to go to this restaurant, she'd say, my God, that's a full week's, well, it's $23, a full week's salary. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, because I want to practice for when I'm successful. Mm-hmm. And I want to go to good restaurants and see what it's like.
Now you go to McDonald's and spend $23.
Now I go to McDonald's. I practice the other way.
So, yeah, get your taste ahead of your pocketbook, and your pocketbook will catch up with it. What's the best advice you've ever received about advertising, Jerry? Do you recall?
Well, yeah, there have been people who, you know, and it's always the same, and it comes from so many people. You've got to really always tell the truth. Don't get yourself into a situation where you're off. You know, you've got to be straight with your clients, and you know, you may lose an account for telling someone the truth, but you owe them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You owe them the truth, and so. Look, I can be very diplomatic, but in the end, I've been able to tell people, you know, this is not going to work. Mm-hmm. This product isn't as good, and you know, it's a tough call. But if you tell people the truth, if you square with your clients, and you know, you'll still lose accounts, but over a period of time, they'll start to look at you and understand that, you know, because the stereotype is the ad guy who's always lying, and you know he's running around and he's desperate, and it's Tony Perkins one of those Tonys who was in the Rock Hudson movies, always terrified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tony
Perkins. You can be a good advertising person. You don't have to be afraid of anyone, and you should be ready to risk failure. I intend to fail a number of more times in my life. Because, I remember someone telling me, you know, you cannot always succeed, but if you're afraid to risk failure, then you're never going to succeed.
You know, when you see advertising out there that lacks focus or a misguided idea, I immediately, Jerry, think that there's some lackey agency out there that didn't have the personal fortitude to tell their client, you know, we don't need to be doing this, or getting input from their client or whatever.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's exactly what you're talking about there. Are brands becoming less distinctive today, Jerry, than they were, say, 20, 30 years ago?
Oh yes, they are. Yes, they are. They're becoming less distinctive because they don't have the same life cycle. You know, they're put to bed. There are people. What happens is that you always used to be able to meet the entrepreneur, the guy who was the man behind the company. That was another era. Now the man who built the company is dead,
mm-hmm.
and his kids have sold the company, and there's someone running the company who basically is worried about the board of directors, and he's looking over his shoulder. So there's very little chance of people taking risk on the corporate side. You know, don't tell me that you can have a guy lying in commercials and you're gonna have our product with a lying salesman. That was Joe Azusa.
Yeah.
But I had a wonderful man named Jack Riley, who was the head guy over at Azusa, and he said, "Hey, let's go with this."
Again, willing to take a risk, and so many clients aren't willing to do that, or agencies willing to present to a client with a risky idea. We have less than a minute left, Jerry.
Actually, we've got about a half minute here, Brent.
Half minute left?
Less than a half minute.
Where do you see Jerry?
You want the secret of life? No. Okay.
I was going to say, where do you see Jerry Delafamina in 10 years? But the answer is right here on the advertising show.
Working.
There you go.
Probably starting another agency. Probably selling another agency. I want to catch up to Donnie.
No more Hoovers, though. Jerry Delafamina on the advertising show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
We are the men of Texaco. We wear the Texaco star. We like to think at Texaco, we've got everything for your car. We've got wipers for your windshield belts and plugs and tires, too.
It's the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And thanks again to Jerry Delafamina, chairman of Delafamina, Rothschild, Jerry & Partners out of New York, talking to him this weekend. Remember his website, dfjp.com. Lots of good words of wisdom and a few jokes in there, too. It was a fun conversation.
He's one of the all-time great guests for me, I know, and you liked him, too, Ray. And we told him that while he was off the air.
Yes.
But I got to tell you, he's a world of wisdom when it comes to advertising.
Good guy. Here's somebody who's a bunch of wisdom, too, as far as sales. Listen carefully to Jeffrey Gittimer here on The Advertising Show.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
Here's your challenge. Capture your success stories in every way possible. Hey, when you do something memorable in your company or your life, very few people ever know about it. Well, actually, far fewer than when you screw up. How come? That's a simple answer. You didn't tell anybody. You just expect people to find out on their own. And in business, that's a huge mistake. When a memorable event occurs within your company or with a customer, here's a few avenues of exposure that you can capture for others, including all your customers, to see your accomplishments. How about a letter of testimony, or an audio tape interview, or an article in the newspaper, or an article in your own newsletter, or an article in their newsletter, or a call in a talk show report, a blurb on the news, as a part of a testimonial advertising campaign, or a video shoot in their location using your product. Once you capture the event, baby, maximize it. When you do something great, or something great happens, capture it and reproduce it for all to see. So here's the big three steps to take to maximize your exposure and get known for all the good things you do. Number one, document your success. Number two, replicate or duplicate your loyal actions. And number three, tell everyone.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
"This is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks."
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Thanks to our guest today, Jerry Delafamina. We've got Harry Beckwith coming up next weekend.
Great guest.
Author of The Invisible Touch, The Four Keys to Modern Marketing. So we'll find out a lot about that, too.
Among other books, Selling the Invisible, as I recall, which is for marketing service people or anyone that sells service.
It's a great book.
He's written several books, and gosh, I got to tell you, it's going to be a great couple hours with Harry.
With Harry.
You know, Ray, I came across this, and I just have a different view on Consumer Reports now.
Okay.
You're familiar with Consumer Reports?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
You have a good view or a bad view?
Not as good a view before I read this. I had a better view before I read this.
Yeah. Now, really? Why is that?
Well, Consumer Reports has become so influential among car shoppers that some automakers are now sending pre-production cars to the magazine's test engineers for suggestions on changes before the vehicle hits the showroom.
Really?
Now, I don't know about you, but...
Sounds like payola.
Well, I mean, let's just go on here. General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, which often score less favorably than Toyota and Honda in Consumer Reports ratings, have sent camouflage vehicles to magazines into the magazine's Connecticut test facility, and there have been changes made suggested by magazine engineers before putting the vehicles into mass production.
No kidding.
I don't know about you, but this raises a question about the objectivity of the magazine that prides itself, of course, on objectivity. David Chapman, head of the test facility, is quoted as saying, "Basically, we are trying to improve the car for the consumer." But, I mean, that's not really their role. Their role is to evaluate, not to improve or refine. I mean, that's the job of the manufacturer, not
you
the
would think
magazine.
So, yeah, that's weird.
Putting kind of a bit of influence from the magazine standpoint on vehicles that you and I might receive, and they're doing it why? For a favorable editorial or favorable report from Consumers Reports. So they're letting, I don't know. I just think it's kind of
like wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of like sending a a washing machine or whatever to the folks, and, oh, you don't like the switches here? We'll change the switches. Let's resend it. You like it now? Okay, we will manufacture this one.
How interesting.
I don't
Consumer Reports.
Consumer Reports.
Wow.
That's Earl Eldridge of USA Today that reported that in the Marketplace section of usatoday.com.
That's got to give a lot of people reason to think about whether they trust the opinion of Consumer Reports.
Well, you see this kind of thing written, and you got to believe that, you know, in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, you'll see probably an expose on this on, what, 2020 or
sure.
Nightline, one of those
type
of shows.
Howard Stern Show, actually.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
By the way, what's his name? The guy running for governor out there in California?
Arnold.
Earlier this week, Arnold was on Stern.
Jeez.
And they got him on without having to have other politicians.
The political exemption, yeah, right.
Because they can claim Stern's a news program.
Right.
Did you hear this?
Sure, yeah, I definitely heard that.
It's unbelievable.
Uh-huh. Next week, Harry Beckwith, author of The Invisible Touch, The Four Keys to Modern Marketing. That's a book we'll be talking about, but Harry is a plethora of information.
Yeah.
So we've got to throw that word in one more time.
True.
The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth, is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. Stay in touch with us throughout the week at theadvertisingshow.com here on the SSI Radio Network.